The Olympic Games are presented as a symbol of international harmony. Countries square off in wholesome competition, not bloody battle. There's the spectacular athleticism and the promise of a window into a different land, and this year it's China. But the Games are never just about the Games. Last week, there was another reminder of that hard truth. Steven Spielberg quit his job as an artistic advisor to the Beijing Games in protest of China's role as patron of the government of Sudan. To learn more about the politics of the Olympics, we have Olympic historian David Walachinsky on the line. He's also something of an expert in repressive regimes. This week, his annual piece about the world's 10 worst dictators came out in Parade magazine. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thanks. Let's start with Spielberg first. What on earth was he thinking by signing on to the Olympics?
I'm sure that he wanted to, be part of a large spectacle. I think he was probably well-meaning, but I don't think he realized what he was getting involved in.
Well, he obviously has this rich history, not only the director and producer, but notably concern on human rights, Schindler's List and the mm-hmm. Shoah Project, mm-hmm. you know. There's the question of Darfur. Tell us a bit about that and why he would want to pressure China on that.
It's because, first of all, I should say you mentioned my worst dictators list, and I have Omar al-Bashir of Sudan as number two on that list, and Hu Jintao of China as number five. So we're really dealing with...
It's kind of a murderer's row.
So we're in your wheelhouse, is what you're saying.
Yeah. This is not great. And, the thing is that China supplies Bashir and Sudan with weapons. So that's why a lot of Darfur activists like Mia Farrow and now Spielberg have tried to use the Olympics as a way to call attention to Darfur. I really think it's unfortunate in a way, even though I believe they're very well-meaning and they're on the right track. I think it's unfortunate because by emphasizing China's connection with Darfur, it gives a break to the Chinese Communist Party because it draws attention away to their human rights abuses in their own country.
Mm-hmm. When are the moments at which external pressure can work on host countries?
The highlight of the Olympic movement affecting politics in a country domestically was the 1998 Olympics went to Seoul, South Korea. At the time that the Olympics were given to South Korea, it was a military dictatorship. The IOC, the International Olympic Committee, made it clear in a quiet way, not a public way, that the South Koreans could lose the Olympics. And so, much to their credit, actually, the South Korean military stepped down and allowed free democratic elections to take place. South Korea has been a democracy ever since. And this is a great story and a great coup for the Olympic movement. However, I think it deluded, they were deluded into thinking that with that success, they could do the same thing with China. But China is a whole other story.
Well, tell us a little bit about, detail for us some of the things that China has done in its own borders to its own people that rate them as number five on your list this year.
Well, first of all, the Chinese Communist Party, it's the only party in the country. There is no freedom of speech. They control all the media. There are forced labor camps. There are forced abortions in China. I actually was in China recently, and I asked an Olympic official there, what about these forced abortions? And she said, I know that goes on, but we think that our family policy is good for the environment. I had never heard forced abortions portrayed as an environmental issue before. So I think they're living in a whole other world. The internet is censored. I purposely stayed in the hotel where the International Olympic Committee will be, and I was not able to access Wikipedia. I was not able to access BBC News, reviews of certain films about China, et cetera, et cetera.
So other than freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of,
religion,
freedom of the choice of how you choose to live your life as a family, a pretty free country is what you're saying.
Yeah, other than that, everything's okay.
Right.
And that and moving about 500,000 people out of their homes to make way to build Olympic-related venues.
So tell us a little bit, tell us about some of the more memorable episodes in which the Olympics have previously been politicized.
I think a lot of people may remember the Olympic boycotts of 1980 and 84, but actually, first of all, 1936, the Nazi Olympics, as they were known, where Adolf Hitler and the Nazis tried to use the Olympics to showcase their ideology. It didn't work too well because the hero of the Olympics was a black American, Jesse Owens, and the German people just considered him the greatest person in the world. So that didn't work quite as well, but they certainly gave it a shot. But I don't think that people realize that the first Olympic boycotts actually took place in 1956. There were two boycotts. Egypt, Iraq, and Lebanon withdrew their teams to protest the invasion, the Israeli-led invasion of the Suez Canal, and the Netherlands, Holland, Spain, and Switzerland boycotted the 56 Olympics to protest the Soviet invasion of Hungary. So this has been going on quite a while. Then you had the African boycott of 1976, the Jimmy Carter-led U.S. Boycott of 1980 of the Moscow Olympics, and the revenge boycott led by the Soviet Union when the Olympics were in Los Angeles.
So we get worked up. So we get worked up every 4 years, but in a sense, we sort of are forgetting that almost every cycle, it seems like the boycott is more the rule than the exception, or some sort of charged political climate.
What's interesting, though, is that after 84, things calmed down quite a bit. We've had a number of almost politics-free games, or relatively so. I mean, the Olympics is part of the world, so it's always going to be political. But 88, particularly in 1992 and 2000, when the games were in Barcelona and Sydney, the games went really, really well.
Well, and I'm sure that the decline of the Cold War tensions had a lot to do with that. I guess one question I would have is, China is such a major economic power and growing in political influence that it's, you know, I wonder how much they care about what the outside world thinks.
Well, that's it exactly. They couldn't care less. They know that we're dependent on them. China is our number two trading partner. The United States is number two trading partner behind Canada. They own a lot of our national debt. We can't do without them at this point, all that cheap labor and so forth. What they're most concerned about, the Chinese Communist Party, is keeping any protests or dissent off of television so that the Chinese people themselves don't find out about it.
Well, and we'll see how that plays out. David Walachinsky, thanks for joining us. He's the author of The Complete Book of the Olympics.
Thank you.
You know, I covered the Olympics last time in Turin or Torino, and one of the things that was really interesting about, the locals had no sense of it. Mm-hmm. They couldn't afford the tickets. Mm-hmm. They closed up shop. They had no interest in being involved. So it's interesting to see the dichotomy and how the world gets excited about it, and these little places where it's being, where it's happening, the people have very little involvement.
Totally different worlds.
Totally different worlds. Hey, coming up on the Bryant Park Project, we'll review two big sporting events of the weekend, the Daytona 500 and the NBA All-Star Game. We talked to BPP sports guy Bill Wolf. Also, Monday we do politics. Jim VandeHei will be joining us for a look ahead at the primaries tomorrow, happening in his home state of Wisconsin. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.